and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. This week, a rubbish show. I mean, the rubbish show.
This waste is the prize for hours of work by informal recyclers. Taken from bins across the city, piled onto trolleys and dragged here, the waste pickers will now sort and sell to recycling plants.
Waste management, collection and recycling is an essential component of what makes a city work for its citizens. How this is done heavily affects the quality of life in urban areas and can determine the future of the planet as concerns over climate change grows. Earlier this year, we saw Kenya introducing the toughest laws in the world regarding plastic pollution. Whoever is caught producing, selling, or simply using plastic bags might now face imprisonment for up to 4 years. Join us as we find out how cities deal with waste. That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. What happens when communities, cities, or even whole countries fail to deal with their rubbish? Well, in many places, informal waste pickers and recyclers take up the strain. That's the case in South Africa, where an estimated 100,000 people go through people's bins looking for things to sell for recycling. The informal sector is worth around $60 million a year just in saved landfill costs to government, but most waste pickers work in terrible conditions for very low pay. So what can be done to help these recyclers? Monocle's contributor Gavin Fisher went to find out.
A rubbish dump in the south of Johannesburg. Piles of unwashed milk cartons, cans and beer bottles are being sorted. With the sun beating down and flies in the air, it is literally stinking hot. But this waste is the prize for hours of work by informal recyclers. Taken from bins across the city, piled onto trolleys and dragged here, the waste pickers will now sort and sell to recycling plants.
Somebody who's buying here, and then if they finish to buy, they put their stuff in.
Sol Mashau is from the South African Waste Pickers Association. He's here to help me chat to some of the recyclers.
Sorry guys, Ozani. Ozani kancane lan.
But most aren't keen, and you can understand why. The job is technically illegal. The waste doesn't belong to them. But when one guy, called Tebo, agrees to speak, it's clear the illegality isn't one of the main issues.
To pull the trolley the whole day is not easy. When he pulls the trolley on the street, the cars are coming behind. Sometimes the car stamped on his pig and he fell. He get injured sometimes by so doing.
In his mid-30s, thin-faced and weather-beaten, Tebo tells me he's been a recycler for 2 years. On average, he makes just 300 rand, or around $20 a week, with which he has to support his wife and kids.
This job is not an easy job. It's a very difficult job. If maybe you want to make a life, then you can't survive.
They're definitely an asset, Joe. We value them. What we don't like is the type of work they do.
Belinda Booker works for leading plastic recycling company Petco. Though the work conditions of the informal recyclers concern her, she's clear how important that work is.
Our recycling rates is just under Europe and beating America. So we're doing very well with our recycling rates. At the moment, with our targets that we meet, about 80% of them are still being collected by the informal sector. They're brilliant.
Traditionally, the waste picker's job has been seen as one of the lowest in society, though Belinda does believe that is changing.
Because they're digging in sometimes in householders' waste, a lot of people see them as a nuisance because they will dig something and they will maybe mess around the area. But a lot of householders, they tell us now, they sort of have changed their views about them because there's some more media has been happening. And a lot of householders would now put their material aside for them on the day that they actually come and pick in their bins.
Yeah, okay, let's go to those guys. Okay.
Back at the dump, it's clear the recyclers' working conditions don't match the vital nature of their work. But with youth unemployment in South Africa standing at over 50%, recyclers like Makete, who's in his 20s, find they have no other option.
He was trying to go to school for civil engineering, but now he can't make it because there's nobody who's giving me support. He hasn't got parents. He's the only one who's trying to make life fun. That is why he came to make a recycling.
Makerti has only been recycling for a few weeks, but he already looks dazed by the experience. So what can be done to improve lives like his?
We have to be very careful that we help them the way they want to be helped.
Belinda is part of a government committee tasked with legalising the recyclers' work and improving conditions. The main aim is to grant them recycling contracts, but Belinda says this is no easy thing.
The problem is for a formal government structure to give them a tender. They have to be a body. You can't give a contract to 200 individual people. So they have to become a structure where they have to get together and form a cooperative, which they don't want to. They work by themselves. They are entrepreneurs. They work their own time at their own pace. A lot of them don't want to be formalized into cooperatives.
But there are those trying to change this attitude.
Aram.
Hello, Baba.
Hello, I'm Gavin.
On another waste site, this one in the town of Sasolburg, south of Johannesburg, I search out one of those behind a recycling cooperative that could form a model for the future.
Okay, my name is Thoriso Abram Dumailiti. I do recycling.
A humble description from a humble man. Abram and four other waste pickers have banded together, and with funding from organisations like Petco, have formed a formal recycling collection scheme.
It's part of separation at source to encourage people not to mix wet waste and recyclables. Most of the residents, now they don't mix their recyclables and wet waste.
The cooperative allows them to provide a reliable pickup service and a more steady income for themselves.
Working as a group is a good thing because if you are sick, you can get something while you are at home recovering from your sickness. If you are working as a cooperative, we look out for each other. So that is one thing that I like about cooperative.
The cooperative system has also allowed them to access new equipment. They won local government enterprise funding to buy a new waste collection vehicle, moving them away from collection by trolley.
When we started here, we used to collect with those trolleys. Yeah, it's so much better rather than pushing a trolley.
Such vehicles are being provided in a number of projects in South Africa, seen as one way of formalising recycling and making it safer. But as Abraham explains, there are other fundamental issues still to be solved.
The pricing of the material, the people who buy things from us, they are not trustworthy. They don't tell you when the prices go down.
These prices mean Abraham is only earning around 500 rand a week, not much more than those pulling a trolley. The work is safer, cleaner and more reliable, but Abraham says such low rates give the cooperatives little more appeal than working as an individual. But the cooperative has a plan to change this.
When you want to sell to the big market, they require tons. So our aim is to bargain our materials with other cooperatives and then so that we can sell to the big market. So we have engaged with other recyclers at the local areas. Now we have registered 7 cooperatives. So I know if I've donated 5 tons and the other guy donated 8 tons and the other guy donated 3 tons, and then we can always share the money.
It does seem attitudes are changing. The public is more willing to work with recyclers, and projects like this show some waste pickers are more open to working together. These changes can only be good for recycling rates, for the government's landfill bill, and for the environment. But until more support is provided to the system, the ones doing the real work will continue to do little more than survive. For Monocle in Sasolburg, South Africa, I'm Gavin Fisher.
France wastes upwards of 10 million tonnes of food each year, representing around 16 billion euros. When the government announced a ban last year on food chains dumping their extra food, many people got creative. Colette Davidson reports from Paris on the many initiatives popping up around the French capital to deal with the city's food waste problem.
If you weren't paying attention, you could almost just walk by the Frigo Solidaire sitting out front of family restaurant La Cantine du 18 in the north of Paris. A mini fridge on wheels, held up by a few planks of wood, it's rather inconspicuous. But to just walk by this special fridge would be a shame. I meet up with restaurateur Dunya Mitbul, who came up with the idea for a Frigo Solidaire with her mother Malika.
Frigo Solidaire, so it's like a solidarity fridge. It's easy for everyone. It's like everyone can put some food and everyone can take it back.
So it's about 3 in the afternoon now. What do we have in the fridge right now?
Right now we have a bottle of milk, croissants, and some biscuits.
Is that pretty normal for this time of day? Does it get more full?
Usually it's getting more full around maybe 5 o'clock when people get to the shop and buy some things. They come to the fridge and put some stuff on it.
So people are buying things especially to put in the fridge to donate to other people?
Yes, it depends. You can have people buying some food to put it on it. And we have also some restaurants who donate to the fridge.
La Cantine du 18, run by Dunya and Malika, also donates their leftover food to the fridge at the end of each day. I ask Dunya if the food is still there when they arrive the next day.
The fridge getting empty maybe an hour after.
Do you happen to know who is taking the food from this fridge?
It's quite large, but we have some homeless people, retired people, students, and family with many children.
Dunya and Malika's solidarity fridge is the first of its kind in Paris. It's just one of the many initiatives sprouting up across the city to tackle Paris's food waste problem. France wastes approximately 10 million tons of food each year, and as of last February, it became the first country in the world to ban food waste by large food chains. So while restaurants like La Cantine du 18 don't get fined for throwing away their extra food, Dunya says donating their leftovers just seemed like the right thing to do.
I used to live in London for a year, and I've seen that kind of fridge in Brixton. And 5 months ago, I just checked my Facebook and I've seen an article talked about solidarity fridge in Germany. And I was like, what the hell? There is not solidarity fridge in Paris. So I decided to talk with my mom and we get it in touch with 2 associations. And then the adventure began.
Why do you think it's important for Paris in particular to try to have zero food waste?
It's really important for Paris to have many, many of solidarity fridge because we know that there is many, many food waste and many people who need to eat because it's like a vital need. And I think if everyone works on it, we can have no food waste and people getting food easily.
Since the food waste ban was implemented last year, several initiatives have popped up around the city besides the Solidarity Fridge. In November, Paris City Hall offered 500 worm compost bins to any Parisian looking to reduce their food waste footprint. And since January, French activist Baptiste Dubanchet has traveled from Paris to New York using only a bike and a pedal boat to raise awareness of food waste. Others are turning to apps like Linky, which connects supermarkets and shops with local charities to donate leftover food.
Bonjour.
And at Too Good To Go, ordinary shoppers can access food that failed to sell at the end of each day from some of the city's top bakeries, sushi restaurants, and supermarkets.
I'm Lucie Bache and I'm the director for France of Too Good To Go. So Too Good To Go is an app, a mobile app that enables any of us to start fighting food waste on a daily basis. So the idea is to connect local stores, food stores, that might have some food left over at the end of the day, and you and me, like the local users, that are going to be able to pick up these leftovers at the end of the day. So it's like really a win-win solution where we can all fight food waste, where users get really good food for really small prices, and where stores can actually not throw away anymore and get new consumers coming and discovering their products through the app.
Users are geolocalized on the app, which then tells them which stores will have leftover food at the end of the day. You select what you want, and then all that's left to do is pick up what Too Good To Go calls your surprise box.
The idea is that the shop would never know what he has left at the end of the day, but he knows that he always has food. So he's going to compose a little surprise box based on the leftover he has at the end of the day. And you're going to pay a really small price for this surprise box. So when I say you pay between 2 and 4 euros for a surprise box, you're actually going to get between 12 and 15 euros at least of value in this box. So you really pay probably 30% of the value you'll get to pick up the leftovers at the closing time.
Good food for less almost sounds too good to be true. How does the company deal with food safety issues?
So remember that it's only food that would have been sold 10 minutes before, and you're going to buy it and come 10 minutes after. So it's completely nice food and food that you could have bought yourself just if you would come 10 minutes before. But it's because it's the closing time, it's not possible to sell it the day after. So it's product that you're going to have to eat tonight, but it's still completely good food. And the idea is that the stores are really careful with that because they don't want to impact their image or anything. So we make sure that the food that you find on Too Good To Go is as good as the food you would have bought on a normal store and paid full price.
That same logic applies back at Dunya and Malika's Solidarity Fridge. If anyone gets sick, the responsibility falls on La Cantine du 18. But that's unlikely to happen since the food is gone almost as soon as it's put in. The idea is catching on so fast, in fact, that another solidarity fridge is already in the works in the 12th district of Paris, and Dunya is busy setting up France's first nonprofit dedicated to solidarity fridges to encourage others to give back and reduce the amount of food they waste.
I'm just telling them that you should do it because it's not that hard, it's really easy. Just like, it's like an habit, and you're just helping people, many, many people, and you're getting in touch with them, we're just talking with them, so it's like we create a social link, you know, and that's the best thing in the fridge.
For Monocle in Paris, I'm Colette Davidson.
And finally on this week's show, we head to Austria. Vienna is an exceptionally clean city, but it's not boring, sterile cleanliness. The city's rubbish collectors go about their business with fun and gusto. In fact, it's the most popular department within the city council. Monocle's Alexei Korolev asks why they're so successful.
They dress brightly, they make jokes, they even have a band. These are the 48er, the 48ers, Vienna's rubbish collectors.
In other cities, I think the people who clear the trash away have no identity. They're quite anonymous. But in Vienna, it's a beautiful thing that they are very charismatic. They take their job very seriously. The city is very clean. But at the same time, they hang out after work with a sausage and a beer and greet everybody. And they have great marketing. They are the most liked group on Facebook of any part of Vienna City Council. So more than the culture department or the education department, people love their Müllmen, the rubbish collectors.
Eugene Quinn is a British-born urban activist and tour guide living and working in Vienna.
So on my tour of Vienna's ugliest buildings, I wear a pair of trousers which come from the MA48, the part of Vienna's city council which deals with rubbish. Yeah, I mean, I wear the trousers partly because I love the idea of playing with identity. And if you walk around the city in those luminous orange, you know, high visibility pants, then you belong to a different group than I'm not necessarily a working class hero myself. I'm at walking tours and social dining projects. But as soon as I put on those trousers, I'm greeted by all of these rubbish department. And other people maybe judge me slightly differently.
My name is Ulrike Volk. I'm working for the MA48. And MA48 is the institution within the city of Vienna, which is responsible for waste prevention, separate collection, street cleaning, vehicle fleet we have, and also for lost and found. So it's a very big working task we have to fulfill for the city of Vienna, for the Viennese people.
And it is, of course, one of the more fun departments within the city of Vienna. Why is that? What makes it so colourful? I mean, first of all, the orange uniforms, but there's more than that.
First of all, we have really, really cool workers. They are very proud of the job and everybody loves them, likes them. They're the heroes for children, and because of their color of the uniform, it's orange for security reasons. You see it very easily within the city. Waste is not a very sexy topic. And our task is to change people's behavior, that they don't throw waste on the floor, on the ground. And on the other side, that the waste, what they have at home, collected separately. And as it is not very sexy, we try to be very humorous. We are cool people. Like, for example, the garbage bins, they have stickers on them with cool wording slogans. We were also the first ones who printed big poo.
Yeah, dog poo.
Dog poo on big advertisement scales. And we did things other people wouldn't
dare to do.
Dare to do that, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not just funny slogans and music groups. The MA48 also runs a highly popular community festival called Mistfest.
We started about 30 years ago. There was a school project, and at the end of this school project, they said, okay, we say thank you for the pupils, and we made a party for them, but also with entertainment and information. And that was a really, really small, there were just a couple of hundred people. Then we decided to make it again after 2 years or whatever, and now it's a really, really big 2 days lasting party every year in September. It's always on a weekend. Altogether, about 30,000 people come each year on these 2 days. And at this Mistfest, it's the waste party translated, the Viennese people can come for free. And there they get lots of information, but not just a folder or whatever we put into their hands. No, we try to work together with them. We can make a quiz. We make little games with the children. They are coming. And we have a big flea market there with good stuff. It shows waste prevention, for example. But, and that's what the good thing is, we're also making a party. We combine information with party. So they have a reason to come there, and we get the opportunity to get in touch with lots of people who normally maybe not deal about waste, and then we can motivate them to be part of the system, and that they understand why they should participate, why they should prevent waste, why they should collect separately and stuff like that.
There's certainly a thing or two that other cities can learn from Vienna about rubbish, but there is something they can't copy. Eugene Quinn again.
Well, there's a kind of working class heroes tradition in Vienna. It is a socialist city in a conservative country. I think there's something, yeah, noble and worthy about that idea that every job is valuable, because Vienna is a city full of people who don't like their work very much and who make it very clear that they don't really want to help you or serve you. And then to come across people who are doing a very unglamorous job, who really take it very seriously and who do it very well, is refreshing and modern somehow. Working class heroes.
For Monocle in Vienna, I'm Alexei Korolev.
Well, that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Ribello and it was edited by David Stevens. Tune in on Monday when a brand new edition of Tall Stories comes out. And also remember to subscribe to ensure that you don't miss out on any new episodes. But to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, well, here's Betty Wright with her 1972 hit, Clean Up Woman. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.
A woman who